glad you're here this morning. We are Genesis Church. We're kind of a new church. We've just been around for about 5 months now. And our real heart's desire is to help people meet Jesus and encounter the living God in a way that's life-changing. This morning, we're going to look at an interesting story about a wrestling match. When I was in high school, I don't want to say liking, because wrestling is just weird, but you know, there was wrestling at the Chase in St. Louis. Now, you got to be an old dude like me to remember this, but guys like Harley Race and Kerry Von Erich and the Von Erich brothers, you know, I remember, you know, they were famous for the claw. You know, they could come and hit you with the claw, and he'd grab a guy, and a guy would go to his knees. No. I got off the airplane one day, I was meeting a friend getting off an airplane one day, and Andre the Giant got off the airplane. Now, see, all you young people are going, who is he talking about? But all this old people, we get Andre the Giant. He was 7'4", 400 pounds of wrestler. And I always thought, yeah, they're, you know, overdoing that. He's not really that big. They just, like, put the camera close. No, he was huge. I was like, you know what? I do not want to meet this guy in a dark alley. I don't want to encounter him anywhere. He's a bad-looking, mean-looking, rough giant, no doubt about it. And then, you know, we get to the Hulk Hogan stage, you know, and there's the, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, the great argument is wrestling real or is it fake? Well, when I was in high school, we used to have a lot of fun with it. In fact, I went to a camp one time and they had a talent show. And since me and the group of guys that I hung out with had no talent, we decided we were going to audition doing a wrestling thing. And so our whole youth group got involved in this. They let us in the show. It was amazing. We got up on stage and, you know, we were start off with two guys, and I was one of the guys. We acted like we were wrestling, you know. We set up chairs and stuff, and I came flying off a chair, landed on a guy. You know, it's, oh, you know, he goes down, you know, and we're tangling. Well, then, you know, when it was all over, our whole youth group came out of the crowd. People were throwing chairs and stuff. It was hilarious. The place went nuts, and we felt like, you know, a bunch of 18-year-old really cool people for a day. And then nobody remembers that, but I had fun with it. You know, the whole wrestling thing, if you're into wrestling, wow, why? It's not real. Now, this UFC stuff, I guess, is a little more, you know, people are into that. Kind of wrestling's old news, because now they're, like, doing it for real, and people end up bloody. I don't get that either, but, you know, the wrestling with other people can be fun, especially if it's, you know, made up and faked and rehearsed. But there's some people, some beings you really don't want to tangle with. I really wouldn't want to for real tangle with Hulk Hogan or Andre the Giant or any of these guys. And we're going to look at a story about a guy who we've been dealing with the last number of weeks, a guy named Jacob, who has an encounter with a man. We'll talk about who that man is in a minute, who has an encounter with a man that literally blindsides him and cold cocks him. And then the next thing you know, they're in a match that goes all night. You know, and they wrestle, they battle. It's a toe-to-toe combat that goes all night. And as they're doing this battle, as they're doing this wrestle, what's happening is that God is working in the life of this guy to literally change him from the inside out and to do something incredible in his life. The story of Genesis, we've been looking, this is in the book of Genesis, which is in the first book of the Bible. And the story of Genesis is really, has some common themes all the way through. Those themes are, first of all, creation. All the way through Genesis, we see the story of God, how God created and owns everything, and creation is highlighted. From the get-go, we find that this earth and everything that is in it is his. It is crying out, this is owned by God. It's his. He owns it. He made it. He loves his creation, and his highest creation were people, Adam and Eve. The other people in Genesis are a continuation of what God did in those people, and God made them for himself. He loves them, and his passion for those people, for you and for me, are to have great lives that are filled with him. But the second theme that's all through the story is the theme of curse. The theme that even though God created this and loves it, we as people, starting with Adam and Eve, chose ourselves over him. We said, listen, I don't want a God. I don't want somebody telling me what to do and calling the shots. I'm going to live my life my way. I don't want somebody getting in the way of that. And we literally fell from our relationship with God. We broke it off, and we are now under what is called a curse, where God says, listen, I love you, but I cannot allow you to live this way. I have to live in perfection. And so there's a curse, but then God gives a covenant, which means that God intervenes in the lives of people. God takes the initiative, and he steps in the lives of people and speaks into their life and calls them to be different, to be changed, to love him, and to come back into a relationship with him. And he always is the one who starts it. And then there's change. As God calls these people out, their lives that are a mess, that are wrecked. We see this all the way through Genesis. All these people are weird and have problems and have issues. I was talking to somebody this week, and it was kind of like we were talking about these stories in Genesis and how when you read them, you're kind of looking at these people going, man, these people are nuts. What is wrong with them? And then you take a big deep breath and you go, oh, yeah, they're just like me. I'm just like these people. And one of these guys is Jacob. We see that God created Jacob and had a purpose for him from the get-go. But Jacob, even in his name, is a guy who says, I am living life all about myself. I'm going to cheat my way and steal my way and be just a rotten guy all the way through. And, you know, he's born. He is one of two twins. He has an older brother by just a hair named named Esau. And Esau's, you know, the big, manly, tough man. Jacob's kind of the soft, weak, feminine guy, you know, kind of, you know, into himself, wearing product in his hair and, you know, feeling wonderful about who he is and, you know, got to look just right for the girls and, you know, but he cheats his brother out of his place in the family. He lies to his brother and he cheats his brother over a bowl of soup. He lies to his dad when his dad is old and basically cheats his way into the position of the leader of the family as his dad gives him the blessing for the family. And then because of that, his brother Esau's not real happy with him. He's like, you know what? That's fine. You can be in control of this family. I'm going to kill you, boy. And so Jacob takes off and runs away. And for 25 years, he has run away from his family and the situation he created. And he goes and he lives with his mother's family several hundred miles away. While he's there, while he's in this place away, or actually on the journey to meet his mother's family, he encounters God for the first time. Has this vision of the stairway that goes up to heaven and angels on it. But we found about Jacob that Jacob tries to corner God, and Jacob kind of says, all right, I'll have this neat experience. He compartmentalizes his faith, and he leaves his, you know, this altar to God at this place called Bethel, but then he goes on with his life. And so often we're just like that. We go to church on Sunday, we may have these experiences where we need God in our life and we'll pull out the God file. But then when those times are over, we'll put that file back, put it in the drawer, and go on with our lives. And that's kind of what Jacob has done. But then he ends up at this land, and as he's living in this land, he meets his uncle Laban, who is worse than he is. He's a bigger cheat and a bigger deceiver. He ends up getting married to two women. Not a good idea because they are sisters and they don't get along. They're fighting all the time. And it's just this big mess that is created because of Jacob's lifestyle and just the way he lives his life, the way he ends up with people all around him that are just like him. And the cheater and the swindler is getting cheated and swindled. After 20 years there, he ends up with two wives, two maids that he has children with. It's just a mess. He ends up having 11 children. And finally, after the 11th child is born, they're all freaks just like he is. God speaks to him again and says, it's time for you to go home. This isn't working. But the whole time, one of the things I want you to understand about this whole scenario is that God is working in the life of this guy to change him. We don't see it yet, but he is gradually bringing Jacob to a point where God can step into his life and radically grab him by the ears and say, listen, I want you to be different than this. Because the whole purpose of this whole story is that God is going to create a nation out of these people. He promised Jacob's grandfather and father that he was going to do this. And God is going to use this tribe of people to become what will become the nation of Israel. And through the nation of Israel, eventually God is going to send his only son, Jesus, to save the world. That's what God is up to. But the problem we have this morning as we encounter the story is we still have Jacob, who's a cheat, his family, who are just as bad a mess as him. And the question that people ought to raise when they're reading this story is, how is God going to take this Jerry Springer clan of people and turn them into a great nation that will represent him? And, you know, as a church, we need to wrestle with that. How does God take a place, a group of people like us, Genesis Church, and turn us into a group of people in the city of Eureka that can be life-changing for people? And the answer is that sometimes, we need to have a knockdown, drag-out wrestling match with our Creator. That's where this story goes this morning. It's a great story. I hope you're challenged by it. I hope you learn a little bit from it. But I hope that you'll be compelled by the story as we look at a little bit more of the life of Jacob. You'll be compelled to stop and say, you know what? At times in my life, I need to have the same kind of experience. If you have a Bible, you can flip over to Genesis chapter 32. If you don't have a Bible this morning, we have Bibles at the end of your row there. We'd love for you to take one and read with us. Also, if you don't have a Bible that's yours at home, you are more than welcome to keep that as our gift to you, to take that home, read it, study the Bible. God speaks through the scriptures. God speaks through this book to us. And we'd love to give that to you as just a gift for being with us today. We're going to be on page 23 in that Bible, if you're using one of those, or in Genesis chapter 32. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the story about the wrestling match, and then we're going to back up and really work through some of the issues that lead up to this, okay? Genesis chapter 32, and we're going to begin with verse 22. The same night he arose and took two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. Now, here's what's going on. Remember I told you his uncle Laban was a mess? Well, he had come to the point where he and Laban had it out so many times that they kind of put up a pillar. And this pillar said, you don't cross. It's kind of like a line in the sand. They'd drawn this line, and Laban said to Jacob, you don't cross that line. And Jacob said to Laban, you don't cross that line. So Jacob had nowhere to go backwards. He also realized that he was supposed to go home. And this river, this stream, is kind of in the path going back to his homeland. But he realizes that when he gets back to his homeland, his brother Esau is waiting for him. And his brother Esau really wants to take his life. His brother Esau, when he left 20 years ago, 25 years ago, wanted to kill him and was so mad, he didn't know what to do. And so he is facing this situation where he is going to walk back into this scenario where his brother may want his life and may be ready to take him and his whole family out in the whole nine yards. And so he's got nowhere to go forward without trouble. He's got nowhere to go backward without trouble. And all that trouble is because of him. Because of his character, because of the way he lives life, because he lived his whole life all about me. Jacob, his very name means that, deceiver, one who grabs the heel, one who lives life all about me. His very name is that. Now he's at this river and he takes his wife and his kids and he sends them across, realizing he's got to go forward to meet his brother. He's not sure how that's going to turn out, realizing that he could be in desperate trouble. Sends them across the river. Verse 23, he took them and sent them across the stream and everything else he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. And when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. So here's Jacob. He sends his family across the river, and he's kind of goes back, and he kind of sets up his own little place where he's just by himself. He's probably sitting there with, you know, maybe a little fire going, just kind of chilling out. And out of nowhere, this guy comes in, pow, cold cocks him, rolls him over. Now it's like, hey, buddy, it's on, me and you. And all of a sudden, he is wrestling with this guy. Now, I'm going to give you a heads up on what's going on here. This guy that he is wrestling with is not just some weird dude who came out of the woods and is like, hey, you might have money. I'm going to take it from you. This guy who has cold cocked him, who's, you know, power slammed him, is now trying to put the claw on Jacob, is Jesus Christ himself. This is a situation in scripture that we call a Christophany. I want to use that word this morning because some of you would be impressed. Hey, there's a big word. Mike used a big word. I know a few, okay? A Christophany. What is going on here? Something that happened a number of times in the Old Testament where God would literally show up himself, show up in earthly form and demonstrate himself in a physical way, a face-to-face way with his people. And this situation here is one of those times. See, when we look at Jesus, I want you to understand that first of all, our image of Jesus is bad, okay? We have this picture of Jesus, and this is what we've kind of had given to us, all right? Jesus is this guy who's about 5'4" and weighs about 135 pounds. He's got product in his hair, long feathery hair, wearing a dress. And he walks, you know, kind of this flowing, gentle way and points, "I'm Jesus, hello." And you know, we talk about worshiping this guy. I was listening to this one guy. I cracked up when I heard this. We tell men to worship Jesus. And then we have this image of Jesus that's like this, okay? And men look at him and go, "Worship him? I can take him. Are you kidding me?" Because we've created this image. Listen, Jesus is a guy who will cold cock you. He will take you out. He shows up in this situation, and he is literally in a hand-to-hand wrestling match. Now, this is literally 2,000 years before Jesus is born as a human on this earth. But you need to realize that Jesus came as a man, but he always was God. John chapter 1 tells us this. Look at this passage up here. Chapter 1, verses 1 and 14. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Jesus was there. When it's talking about the Word is Jesus himself. And verse 14 says, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us." In the beginning, Jesus was, and he always was God. And what takes place in this passage that's really interesting is this guy who is squirrely, who is a problem, who is all about me, who will cheat anybody, who will steal from anybody, who will set up his life to get what he wants out of life, will use anybody to get there, now is face-to-face in a wrestling match with Jesus Christ, the God of this universe. Wow. And they wrestle all night long. They tangle from the darkened night until morning. And it says that when the man saw that he had not prevailed over Jacob, he reached down and touched his hip, put it out of socket. Now Jacob's got an issue. And read on. We're going to unpack this in a few minutes, but I just want you to see what goes on. Verse 26. "Then he said," the man said, "Jesus said, 'Let me go, for the day is broken.' But Jacob said, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' He said to him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Jacob.' Then he said, 'Your name will no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you've striven with God and with men and have prevailed.' Then Jacob asked him, 'Please tell me your name.' He said, 'Why is it that you ask my name?' And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, 'For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered.'" The word Peniel, what he named that place, is the face of God. I've seen the face of God. "And the sun rose up on him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip." What a weird story. What I want to do for the next few minutes is I want you to see what happens in the life of this guy and why this situation is so important and what it meant to Jacob. But as we do that, I want you to understand that Jesus may not show up physically, but he does show up in other ways. And there are times in my life where I've literally wrestled with Jesus. Now, why doesn't Jesus show up like this? I mean, literally, there are times in the Old Testament where Jesus shows up physically in the flesh. We have these Christophanies where Jesus makes real appearances to Old Testament people to show himself and change their lives. Why doesn't he do that anymore? And I'm going to tell you two basic reasons. The first reason is because Jesus already came in the flesh and lived on this earth. And when he lived on this earth, he showed us who he was. The people in the Old Testament did not have Christ in the flesh. He hadn't come yet. And so they didn't really know what to look for, and they didn't really understand fully who God was. And so God would show up and speak and have these encounters with his people so they could understand him and follow him. We have Jesus who's come and showed us what God is all about. But the second thing is that Jesus also left behind two things for us that replaced those the need for him to show up physically, and that is the Bible and the Holy Spirit. If you know Jesus, if you have a relationship with Jesus, you don't need God to show up physically and speak to you. Christ lives in you. That's what it means to become a follower of Jesus, a Christian. It means that Christ comes into your life and he does the same things that he did with the Old Testament people, but it's ongoing in your life. And he's given us the Bible so that we can figure out who God is, what he's about, how we can live and honor him and trust him and follow him. And so what these Old Testament appearances do is they give the Old Testament saints, the followers of God, the same thing that we get from the Bible and having the Holy Spirit in our lives. And God, sometimes, there have been times in my life where it may not have been a physical battle, but I've wrestled with Jesus, and God has moved in my life, and sometimes it's the wrestling where I try to rebel against him and put him off. At other times, it's the type of wrestling where it's just like, you know, hey, see, guys will get this, all right? Two guys get together, there's something, you know, I mean, the way that guys show love, you know, two guys who show love with, you know, hugs, it's weird unless you're at a football game. There's something physical. It's like, oh, yes. You know, girls, you don't understand. You know, the best way for guys to hang out is to go do something where they like hit each other and they roll on the ground and tackle and push and shove. And when it's all over, and you know, the guys are bleeding, they're like, yeah, me and you, let's go get a drink. You know, girls look at guys and go, why? Part of what's going on here is the greatest way God could show his compassion for Jacob was to come and literally do this hand to hand. And they wrestle all night. It's a great story. What happens? And that's what I want to show you for the next few minutes. What really takes place? And we're going to kind of break this up kind of like, you know, in our outline today, kind of like you would for a fight. There's the pre-fight, the main event, and then, you know, what happens? The post-fight, what happens afterwards? And the first thing I want to do is I want to talk to you about the pre-fight. What happens up front that God uses in Jacob's life to cause him to be ready for this life change? And the pre-fight, you know, if I remember, you know, Ali and Frazier, you know, Ali was always talking smack before the fight, you know, and I float like a butterfly and I sting like a bee. And I remember, you know, in the Rocky movies, Mr. T, I pity the fool, you know, I'm going to take you out. You ain't going to last, Rocky. You know, there's this pre-fight thing that kind of gets everybody ready for the fight. Well, God doesn't really talk smack, but he does work in the life of Jacob to corner him so that Jacob is ready for this encounter. And I think God does the same kind of things to us. What does God do in Jacob's life? What does he do in our life that prepares us for these encounters? And for Jacob, there's three things. The first thing is that God leaves him empty. He is left empty. Verses 1 and 2 of chapter 33 tell us what goes on. I'm sorry, chapter 32. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw that he said, this is God's camp. So he called the name of the place Mahanaim, which means two camps. Now, here's what goes on. The reason this is important is that if you've been studying the story, or if you've been with us, you remember that Jacob, on his way to where his mother's family lived, met Jesus. And there was this ladder that went up to heaven, and the angels went up and down. But what happened is that Jacob compartmentalized his faith. He built a little altar there, and he left, and he kind of left God there, and he went on his way. So Jacob left God, but here's the question. Did God leave Jacob? And the answer is no. God is in control. God even uses the junk in Jacob's life to do in him what he wanted to do. God was there the whole time. And even though Jacob kind of put God off, God was always involved in Jacob's life. And Jacob is now returning back home, and he realizes that the God he left at Bethel, he doesn't know where he is. And God shows up again in the form of these angels. This is kind of like a bookend of the story, if you get that, you know. We have the first time this happens, this is to help us remember what took place, that Jacob again sees God and understands, you know, God is with me. We need those times where all of a sudden, I've kind of put God off. I've kind of done my own thing. And all of a sudden I realize if I'm left up to myself, I'm in trouble. And God will show us that, you know what? I'm here. I'm with you. You're not alone. But sometimes it's not until I feel the emptiness of myself and my wandering that I can really experience the angels and the presence of God in my life. So God leaves him empty, but then he shows him his angels. And not only that, God leaves him broken. You know, he has this vision of the angels, But then he turns and he sends troops of men. He sends some of his servants and some of his shepherds who are watching his sheep. He says, listen, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go out and I'm going to give you 550 animals, sheep and goats and cows and all this kind of stuff. I want you to go out and meet my brother. Here's my game plan. I want you to go out and meet my brother. I want you to find out if he's still, you know, ticked off at me. If he's still in a bad mood and wants to hunt me down and, you know, he's got like the mafia out looking me up and, you know, there's a dude named Guido with, you know, something in my name on it. Is this where my brother is still out? And so he sends these guys with 550 animals out to meet Jacob or meet Esau, his brothers. And they come back with this report. We saw Esau and all we know, dude, is he had 400 men with him. He had a little militia, man. He was ready for anybody to show up. And all he said is, you tell Jacob, I'm coming. That's all he would say. You tell Jacob, I'm coming. Dude, he is coming at you with 400 men. And Jacob's like, wow. And all of a sudden, Jacob has this harrowing experience. He realizes for the first time in his life, he's an old dude now, by the way, for the first time in his life, he has gotten himself into something he cannot get himself out of. He can't go backwards because Laban's there. If he goes forward, Esau's coming at him. And Jacob is terrified. He comes up with this little plan that shows that he's still kind of a cheat, but in his heart, he realized there's a brokenness here. His plan is this. I'm going to send all my sheep and goats and all my servants out front, and then I'm going to put my family in front of me, and I'm going to be in the back. And every time Esau shows up with his 400 men, you just tell him, hey, Jacob's back there. Jacob's back there. See how he's still trying to protect his own skin? He even puts his family, his wife and his kids kind of out in front of him. Sends them across the creek. We saw that a few minutes ago. And so this is what's going on. In the pre-fight hype, though, what's going on here is that Jacob is left broken. All of a sudden he realized, I cannot get myself out of this situation. And so he does something that shows a third thing. God left him desperate. He prays, which is nuts because he hadn't prayed for 25 years. We don't have a single time where Jacob stops to pray, but he prays here. And in this prayer, this is what he says. Chapter 32, blue verse 9. Jacob said, O God of my father, Abraham, and God of my father, Isaac. You see that? He doesn't say, oh, God, my God. God, you're my dad's God, and you're the God of my grandpa. I really need you right now. Oh, Lord, who said to me, return to your country and your kindred that I may do good. God spoke to him, said, you need to go back home. He's reminding God, you told me to do this. You told me to go home. I am not worthy. There it is. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love, all the faithfulness that you have shown your servant. For with only my staff I crossed the Jordan, and now I've become two camps. He said, listen, when I went that way, the only thing I had was my staff in my hand. You've blessed me, God. I get that. I'm starting to understand what's going on. I desperately need you, but I realize that everything I have up to this point is because of you. And he says, please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me. The mothers with the children, and the mothers with the children. This is what he finally says. He has a great prayer. Sometimes our best prayers go like this. God, help! I'm in trouble. Save me. Get me out of this mess I made for myself. You know, that's not a bad prayer. God, I know you love me. I know I made this mess for myself. Please deliver me. But not just this. And this is one of the things we start to see a little bit of change and the desperation. He said, but not just me. Save my family and my kids. I need that. And so then he finishes his prayer. He sends his men off out in front of him. He sends his wife and his children across the creek. And he is left alone. And here comes Jesus. Boom. Wrestling match. And so the pre-fight hype leads to the main event. We had this wrestling match that goes on between Jesus. And there's some great things. A man wrestled with him. This is a hand-to-hand encounter. There's debate over whether this was a physical event or just a spiritual event. I personally believe that this is a physical event. Part of the reason I believe it is because when it's all over, he reaches down and touches his hip. And next thing you know, Jacob's got a hip that's out of socket that will affect him the rest of his life. Now, why did God do this physical event? Why did God have this encounter? Because I think God is a God of relationship. He's not a God who's distant, who's out there just trying to, you know, direct things like a traffic cop with a light. He's a God who gets in our lives, who gets in our business, who loves us enough to get intimately involved with us and do whatever it takes to change us. And so he wrestles with Jacob. And this image, you know, he's kind of having this wrestling match and it's getting close to morning. And it says that the man realized that Jacob was wrestling with him and was prevailing. And you read that and you go, holy cow, Jacob's beaten Jesus. Well, not really. I mean, he is. Jacob's will is getting stronger and he's hanging in there. But it's not like it's two guys going at it who are equal strength and Jacob's kind of in control. I remember, you know, wrestling is kind of a fun thing at the Hubbard household. We wrestle on the bed all the time and it's a great thing. When my kids want to come up and jump on a bed and you know, they think they can take out dad. Okay, look at me, all right? No, okay? But as I wrestle there, I will tangle with them. You know, Alex will jump up on a bed or Andy. Andy's getting a little closer. He's getting stronger, all right? So it's a little more of a match. But now even little Josiah, I get down there and he's like, I'm laying on the bed. And this little almost two-year-old kid who's built like a Mack truck, that's true, but we'll take two steps back and come running and go, whoa, and go airborne, wham, land on me. It's like, huh, you know. And I think even in his mind, he's going, yeah, I can take dad. You know, and so you tangle with them. And as, you know, this dad who loves his kids, I will sit there and wrestle with them and let them kind of, but every once in a while, it's like, all right, I'm just reminding you. It's, flip them over, hold them down, spread those arms out, and tickle them like crazy until they cry. Because that's my way of saying, if I really want to, I can take you anytime. Okay, it's kind of like when Andy, when he was about 10 years old, he'd go out and play basketball with me. And he'd come running in, you know, after a game. We'd play, and I mean, I know that, you know, I'm out of shape, but I can still shoot a basketball, okay? I don't mean that. It's just true. And so I'd go out and play basketball with my son. He'd come running in the house, Mommy, Mommy, I beat Dad. I'm like, come on, let's play again. I'd beat him 20-0 just to remind them. Listen, I will let you beat me here, okay? Because I want you to have fun, and sometimes it's fun to win. But at any point in time, I'm going to break out my jump shot, and I'm going to run over you, and I'm going to dunk on you if I have to. I can beat you if I want to. That's the wrestling match. Jacob and Jesus are wrestling, and Jesus has brought himself down to Jacob's level so that they can interact in such a way that is intimate and relational and is the way guys love to get close to one another. And they are duking it out. And just about the time that Jacob is feeling like, hey, man, I licked Laban. I licked my brother. I can lick you. Jesus reaches down and goes, huh, yeah, pow. And the fight's over. He literally puts his hip out of socket and says, hey, I'm just reminding you that at any point in time, I can snuff you out, dude. You're nothing. And Jacob is holding on for dear life now. He's got a hip that is out of joint. His pride is crushed because for a moment he thought he could take him. He is holding on to Jesus, and Jesus says, you know what? It's sun up. I'm out of here. And Jacob says something that's incredible. He says, listen, don't leave here until you bless me. Now, that is so key because in that culture, you were only blessed by somebody who was superior to you. People on the same level don't give blessing. Fathers give blessing to children. King give blessing to servants. You know, that's the situation. And Jacob comes to this hardcore reality. Whoa. This guy I was wrestling with is much more than just some ordinary man. I was holding on to God. And he says, I'm not letting you go until you bless me. And Jesus looks at him and says, well, what's your name? Now, he doesn't ask him that question because he needs to know. He's God. He knows what Jacob's name is. But he has Jacob say his name because his name is a reflection of his character. The name Jacob means deceiver, cheat, all about me. And he came into this battle. He came into this battle, Jacob. And then Jesus says, it's not your name anymore, son. I'm going to change your name. Your name is now going to be Israel. It becomes the name of the nation. It's used over 1,800 times in the Old Testament to refer to who these people are. Your name's going to be Israel. The name Israel means the one who wrestles with God, the one who strives with God. And what he's saying, listen, this is going to be your name from now on. Your name used to be all about me. But I now have had this encounter with you. I have tangled with you. You're not the same person after the night. After you've had this encounter with me where we wrestled and I held on to you and I touched your hip, you're going to be different. And you're going to be a guy who is now known not because you wrestle and strive with others. You're going to become known as a guy who wrestles and strives with me. You came in, Jacob, all about me. You're going to leave Israel all about me, God says. And he changes his name. It's a beautiful picture of what goes on. When I was, we had Alex, and she was about 2 years old, in her twos, and man, she was kind of ornery sometimes, and she would throw fits and just for no reason. And it was hard because as a parent, that breaks your heart, and you don't sometimes know how to respond when your kids are crying. And there's one thing when they're hurt or when they're upset, but this is just a bad, in-your-face kind of cry. And she was kind of strong-willed as a baby and showed her, you know, my life is all about me and I'm running the show kind of stuff. And we were having dinner one night and I don't really remember everything that happened, but I remember that she went into this rage of a fit and it was frustrating. And I finally said, you know what? We've got to break this. We've got to solve this problem. And so I grabbed her and I went and sat on my couch and I held on to her. I wrapped my arms around her and she was mad. And for about 30 minutes, she screamed and cried and fought me and pushed. She would have, I mean, she was just totally angry. And I had determined I am not going to let go of her until something happens. Heidi kept coming up to me saying, are you sure? And I kept saying, I don't know what else to do because we're not letting this go on. For 30 minutes, it was, I mean, loud in my ear. And, I'm having this fear that she's going to hate me. I mean, she's not going to want to have anything to do with that after this. But I determined I'm not letting her go until she... till literally her will breaks and she's willing to be the type of person that she needs to be. So I held on to her. It was hard. And then all of a sudden, about 30 minutes into it, she took a big, deep breath and stopped. And I literally felt her whole body, which had been tight and pushy, and I felt her whole body just go limp. And I held on to her and loved her for a minute, and then I put her down. And the crazy thing, this is weird. I don't know. I mean, not everybody should do this. This is not like parenting 101. You need to understand this. She never threw a fit since that day. The reason I tell you this story is because something happens in Jacob when he wrestles with God. God grabbed hold of him and didn't let him go until he went from Jacob, deceiver, to Israel, one who strives with God. It's a great story. And in chapter 32, 33, and 34, because remember, this is what I'm telling you. What's going on here is God is about to take this band of people, this one guy who's the father, these four women who are the wives and the you know, concubines, and these 11, soon to be 12 kids who are all messed up. And the rest of Genesis is about God building the type of character into them that he needs. And he starts with dad. I'm going to change Jacob because if it's going to be a godly family, I need to start with a godly dad. And he wrestles with him, takes him out. The rest of Genesis chapter 32 and chapter 33 tell us how Jacob changes. It's beautiful. The post-fight stuff that goes on here after the main event, how God literally, we see the change in Jacob. First of all, in chapter 33, verses 1 through 3, we see in Jacob that now he sends his family out, but he goes before him. Jacob takes the place. Originally, he was the guy at the back going, y'all go meet my brother, and if he's mad, by the time he comes, me and I'll take some of my kids. We'll run. I'm the one who's out of here. Jacob now is the one at the head of the company. He bows down. He kneels at his brother's feet and bows down to him 7 times, which shows that I am now in humility acknowledging that you're more important. As he goes, his brother comes, and he says, no, brother, I've forgiven you. I love you. Listen, God was at work in Esau's life as well. And he says, I don't need your gifts. And Jacob says, listen, this stuff is not about me. God gave this to me. I have more than enough. Jacob would never say, I have more than enough. But Jacob says, I have more than enough. And then at the end of the chapter, they have this big feast, this big festival, Esau and Jacob. It's a beautiful story of reconciliation that happened because of this encounter with God. They are right with each other. Jacob is right with all the people that he's wronged. He ends up leaving. Esau goes one way. Jacob takes his family, goes another way. They end up at this place called Shechem. And the last verse of chapter 33, Jacob is building an altar again. Anytime we see somebody building an altar, they're worshiping God. And the name of the altar is in chapter 33, the last verse, verse 20. He erected the altar and called it El Elohi Israel. This is what it means. God who is the God of Israel. See, in the Bible, we see he's the God of Abraham. He's the God of Isaac. And when he wrestled with God, he became the God of Jacob. Great story. And there is change. We see in Hebrews chapter 11 a great a verse that tells us about this. Chapter 11, verse 21, it says, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned on the top of his staff. So in the New Testament's telling a short version of the story of Jacob and how Jacob's faith was real. And it says, listen, he blessed his sons and he worshiped as he leaned on the top of his staff. I read that a bunch of times until it made sense. Why is he leaning on the top of his staff? Because his hip's out of joint. God left him marked. But that marking left him changed. And see, here's the thing. Jacob would have never blessed anyone until he wrestled with God. He couldn't be a blessing to anybody around him until he has this encounter. He's a different guy. See, we want to be a church that leads people not to have neat experiences, although those are good. We really want to be a church that leads people to have wrestling matches with Jesus. Where they leave changed. When I was in college, I was wrestling. I mean, I really was struggling with my faith. And I kind of had, I became a follower of Jesus when I was a child. But I kind of was being like Jacob, following my way, living my life about myself. And had really let some issues in my life. And I went to a camp one time. I had this experience at a camp called Windermere. Where God literally showed up and messed my life up for a week. And changed my life forever. I can take you onto a boat dock down there and take you to a pole. That is where I have my WWG, my wrestle with God, my SmackDown. And I'm telling you, I'm standing here today because God met me there. And that's the challenge for you. We all need to have those experiences. There's a verse in Psalm chapter 46, verse 10 and 11, where it says, be still and know that I am God. Get quiet. Get alone like Jacob did and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob. Why here the God of Jacob? Because he's reminding us that when Jacob got alone, God showed up. And the God who wrestled with him is the God who is his fortress, who is his protector. We need to remember that. Here's the challenge for you this week. You may be dry in your spiritual life. You may be going through a time where you're not quite sure what to make of God or how to deal with him. You may be somebody who's seeking, trying to figure out faith for the first time. And the challenge is that God still tangles with us. But we live on the surface so much. We won't get alone. We won't get the Bible out and put it on our lap. We won't look to Jesus and trust him and sing to him and worship him and do the things that will prepare our hearts to meet him. And then we wonder why God hasn't shown up in 25 years. I just want to encourage you. Find time this week. A few hours, a day, a night. Turn the TV off. Grab your Bible. If you're not sure where to start, just start in the book of Mark. And read the scriptures in a conversation with Jesus and ask him to show up. He will. He will. One of the ways we want to wrestle with Jesus is and have time where we literally try to open our hearts to him and listen to him is by doing communion. Communion is a celebration that Jesus gave his followers. And that celebration was literally designed so that people who follow and trust Jesus could stop and think about, first of all, what he did for us. As we have bread and juice up here, there are images of the blood that Jesus gave and the flesh that was broken as he died on the cross. That same Jesus who wrestled with Jacob came and lived life as a man on this earth, and he lived a perfect life, and he took your place and mine as he died on a cross. A horrible way to die, but he did that to pay the penalty for your sin and for mine. And we remember that by having this celebration called communion. If you're a follower of Jesus this morning, we want to encourage you, if you feel comfortable, you're welcome to participate. We'll have some guys down here with the juice and the bread. It's a time to stop and remember that. But it's also a time to stop and reflect on my life and to wrestle with, God, what do I need to have in my life to be more like you? And then to repent, to say, you know, Jesus, I know there's stuff in my life I need to turn from, and I'm following you. If you're here this morning and you're seeking and you're just trying to figure out the God thing, we'd love to talk to you about that and just share more with you. I'll be out at the information table afterwards. We're also going to have a time where we worship. This is a response to say, God, you've spoken to me, now I celebrate you. We're going to have a time where we take up our offering, and the purpose of offering is not to ask for money. If you're visiting with us, we really don't want you to give. We just want you to sit back and relax and enjoy worship. But we do offerings because it is a way that those who are part of Genesis can stop and say, God has done so much for me, just like Jacob did. God has done so much for me. He has blessed me, and now I'm giving a little bit back. But we have this time here that for the next few minutes of doing communion, of worship. My hope is that for the next few minutes, maybe you have a smackdown. Maybe God shows up and wrestles with you and holds on to you and lets you know how much he loves you and how much he wants to make a difference in your life. I'm going to pray. After I pray, the band's going to lead. You can stand and worship with them. The guys will be down here, and when you've kind of prayed about it and you're ready, you can come take communion. Come down the middle aisle, go out the sides. Jesus, we love you. Thank you that you showed up in Jacob's life and you had this smackdown with him. Thank you that you wrestled with him. And I thank you that he just came to the point where he said, I'm not going to let you go till you bless me. Help us to be people like that. That, Lord, when you show up and you work in our lives, we will hold on to you until you bless us. And I just pray this morning as we celebrate this time of communion, you will remind us of the depth of your love and how much you did for us. And you will help us to have hearts of worship and love for you. In your name I pray. Amen.